The Holy Gospel according to Mark, the 8th chapter. Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi, and on the way he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And they answered him, "John the Baptist, and others, Elijah, and still others, one of the prophets." Jesus asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Messiah." And he sternly ordered them not to tell anyone about him. Then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all of this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking to his disciples, Jesus rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan. For you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Jesus called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. I'm going to ask another question. I'm getting into this, like, asking the congregation questions before my sermons lately. I don't know why. But so the question that I have this week is, how many of you have ever had to do a co-presentation with somebody else? Yeah. Okay. Now, I have to admit, sometimes doing a presentation with somebody else can be brutal, especially if you don't really know the other person. I'm sure many of you have had similar experiences. And don't get me wrong, I have been part of presentations with a partner or with teams that have worked brilliantly and have been, dare I say, even fun to do. But I have also been part of ones that were pretty bad. Perhaps the worst one was a presentation that I gave back in high school in my U.S. history class. I was paired up with, now don't take this the wrong way, but a football player super jock guy by the name of Colin. And we were presenting on the U.S. Bill of Rights and how it was formed. And I wasn't super excited to be paired up with Colin, but I guess he was tolerable. And we decided in our presentation, we only met once, to split up every other, we would each take an amendment from the original Bill of Rights. There are 10 amendments in that original bill, and we would each take 5 of them. And we would give a synopsis then in our class presentation using sources we were working on in class. And so I remember we started out and I had the First Amendment, which was the right of freedom of religion. And so I did what I did and then turned it over to Colin, who started talking about the Second Amendment, which is probably the most famous of all the amendments, right? The right to bear arms. And I remember Colin calmly giving details and him starting to say things about how several writers of the Bill of Rights died because they wrote this Second Amendment bravely. And I started thinking to myself, I don't really remember reading that in our textbook. And we continued down the list and Colin started to talk about the Fourth Amendment, right? Against the unlawful searches and seizures. And I finally realized halfway through that he really has no idea what he's talking about. And finally, our high school teacher interrupts us angrily and asks, "Have you done any work on this whatsoever? Because right now," he lectures us in front of the entire class, "you are just paying lip service to something else. The Bill of Rights is too important to not realize what you are saying." I was horrified by this. And it turns out Colin had not done his work and had been procrastinating so much that he felt like he couldn't have the time to read the sources that we discussed in class, and so instead he found the Cliff Notes online. You all probably know where that went. Needless to say, our grade on the partner presentation was not very stellar. But I will never forget my teacher's words to us, however horrified I was, that this is too important to not realize what you are saying. How many of us don't take the time, as we should, to realize what we are saying in different contexts? Though he wasn't giving a partner presentation, there is evidence that the Apostle Peter, I think, fell into this reality too. And as our gospel reads, "And on the way, Jesus asked his disciples, 'Who do people say that I am?' And they answered him, 'John the Baptist, and others Elijah, and still others one of the prophets.' And Jesus said to them, 'But who do you say that I am?' And Peter answered him, 'You are the Messiah.'" So the word that Peter uses here, Messiah, is and was a very loaded term in Judaism. Messiah, or in Hebrew translated as the Anointed One, was historically believed as the one whom God will send to restore Israel and creation. The Messiah was widely believed to symbolize God's answer to God's people's prayers of deliverance and of salvation. Now, exactly what and how the Messiah was going to go about doing this, as you probably could imagine, was under wide interpretation and debate among all of ancient Judaism. And clearly, Peter had his own expectation of what Jesus as Messiah would look like. Remember here, most of ancient Judaism is under occupation. Not just occupation, but severe occupation by the Roman Empire. And it may come as no surprise that there were brutal tensions between Rome and the Jews during this period, and many lost their lives in resistance against this Roman occupation. So Peter, it seems then, with this in mind, really hasn't paid much attention to what Jesus has been saying and doing up to this point. Instead, he sees this as a movement that Jesus is starting purely as a political one, right? Jesus is taking on and going to overthrow the evil Roman Empire. And Peter is most likely thinking to himself, "And I am going to be here to witness that." And not only then does Peter and most, if not all, of the disciples think that this is going to happen, right? But they also are arguing a little bit later, well, who's the greatest? Who is going to be rightly installed as the second lieutenants to Jesus, the Messiah? Who is not, they argue, going to do ministry, but going to accept a lieutenant governor position in this new kingdom that Jesus is going to bring? Clearly, they miss what Jesus is fully talking about. Peter and the disciples are using language to bring about their own status and prestige instead of living out what Jesus is actually doing. No wonder then Jesus has to say in this context, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Language and understanding to the best of our abilities and saying and using language matters. As we have been witnessing in the last couple of weeks, you probably have caught on that the New Testament book of James also has something to say about this. It reads, "With the tongue we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth comes blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so." Actions and words of a Christian matter. We, of course, are living in a very radical age where it has been said that Mexicans bring drugs and are rapists, women can be grabbed by their genitals, and immigrants come from, quote, S-hole countries. It's an un-PC world out there, where cable news commentators tout and compare the freedom of living in the United States to now saying whatever we want. Sure, call Jesus the Messiah or the King or the ruler. Call Jesus friend or lover or just a good guy. Call Jesus whatever you want. It doesn't matter. It's an un-PC world. Or does it matter? My high school teacher's words have been haunting me quite a bit lately. This is too important not to realize what we are saying. In an age of fake news, it's easy for us to see the freedom that the Messiah brings as an individual right to do and say whatever the hell we want. So I ask this question. Is this the freedom that Jesus died and rose again for, and what we as his followers speak to? I think not. For Jesus says in our reading today, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it." Maybe instead of the twisted and sick interpretation of Jesus endorsing physical abuse, which this text has been used again and again and again, right? So women need, even though subject to their husbands of abuse, even need to just go with it because that's their cross to bear, just sick and crap. Maybe Jesus is talking here about a different kind of denial. Maybe the denial here that Jesus lifts up is the temptation and glorification of individual freedom to say and do anything that we please. Seminary professor that I took a class from once said, "The Christian life is a call to transition from a freedom to a freedom for." Let me say that again. The Christian life is a call to transition from a freedom to a freedom for. Christ's death and resurrection doesn't free us to say garbage about our neighbor. Instead, we are released from the bonds and guilt of sin and freed for serving and loving that same neighbor. Roman Catholics have this blessing that they do, and I'm sure some of you have seen it, where the person makes a sign of the cross on their forehead, on their mouth, and on their heart. Probably it's pretty common for priests to do this, and many Protestants do this as well before giving a sermon. And this gesture from my research that I have done is probably 1,000 years old. And it simply means, may the Lord be in my mind, may the Lord be on my lips, and may the Lord be in my heart. That's the power of a ritual gesture. It brings us back and reminds us of something greater than ourselves. Maybe it's time to start holding on to the tradition that brings us back to relationship and toss out the ones that see us as individuals first. Many of you have heard the line attributed to St. Francis of Assisi, "Preach the gospel at all times. Use words if necessary." What an incredible statement to bring us back to being freed for the neighbor. Again, maybe it's time to start holding on to the traditions and language that bring us back into relationship and toss out the ones that see us as individuals first. May you be brought back and reminded of the freedom in Jesus Christ and energized to see the neighbor in new ways. And may we as a church community help keep each other accountable and actively working to understand the language that we do use. For it is too important, and there is too much at stake to not understand as best and fully as we can what we are saying in the name of Jesus the Christ. Amen.